It's Bo Barker, and this is another VO podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another VO podcast.
Don't do that. This is gross.
If you feel like this a grape and you only have raisins,
don't do that.
You have two nostrils.
This wins the most disgusting episode so far.
It's something that I still do, and I still do it and love it.
Don't do that.
It is another week in the book, almost another month in the book, and it's another VO podcast. Good morning, Charles, Jake, and Alden. See, I still get it right.
I like
it. I haven't called you Alden in weeks.
It's only been 2 years.
I don't know how to get it wrong.
Oh, I can get it wrong, believe me. Hey, I want to welcome everybody today. We got a special guest this week. We are very, very pleased to have, because we're always facing a lot of questions in the Facebook group. And the Facebook group is intertwined with two podcasts, VO Life and another VO podcast. And everybody is always asking about audio and noise floor and interfaces and this. And this guy chimes in and helps us on there now and then. But let's just put it all to bed right here on the podcast. Welcome, George Whittam. George the Tech, how are you?
I'm great. How's everybody doing?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Doing good.
Doing good.
Thanks
doing
for good.
Do I sound okay?
You do.
Excellent. Yeah.
Fabulous.
Okay. Good.
Much better than we do.
Yeah.
I better sound
good.
Wait,
we should be asking you, like, do we sound okay?
Yeah.
I hope so.
I need the trick EQing to get this nasal resonance out of my microphone, because I'm getting over a cold again.
Ooh, brutal.
You don't have a spring preset? I thought everybody got a spring preset.
Definitely don't point your mic up your nostrils. Do not point it into your navel pad.
That's right.
Navel passage or navel.
That would be a really...
Either one.
Oh, we're not supposed to point it at our navel?
I know we have a snippet of Jake talking about putting a raisin up your nose and turning it into a grape or something.
Yep, but that happened when I was a very young child.
Yeah.
I put a raisin from a raisin bran up my nose, and later that day it had plumped up to a grape.
So, rehydrating raisins.
Holy smokes.
Two nostrils at a time.
Well, that's the show today, folks.
Now I get the tenor of the show. I'm all here for it.
Didn't know what you were in for, did you?
Yep. So we're going to hit on a bunch of stuff, I'm sure. And we were talking right before we hit the record button that we don't really pre-plan a lot. We might make a note or two. And I just want to kind of start from, first off, let's thank George for all these years of service. The podcast with Dan.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. So much stuff you can go out there and so much knowledge to get. And he's still going. I didn't know this till the other day. Because of having horses and everything, Ryder and I have kind of got a connection. I had no idea that you had consulted him on his build, not because I know he's a smart guy, but I knew he couldn't have done that by himself. So that was kind of neat to see. And then this morning he posts this thing about this golden goose that he got, that one of his agents I think had sent him, and it is basically a big long duck about a foot long with a gold beak, and you screw the beak off and it's a urinal for your studio.
No way.
Yeah. So of course, you know what his comment is, dude, you need to send me one that's a lot bigger.
That is one accessory I have not mounted in a booth yet.
I just wondered about
that. I did see a urinal in a client's bedroom one time. That was really interesting.
Okay. I mean, the 5-gallon bucket on the floor here does great for anything I need. So.
And you can't
great
miss
sound
it,
effects
you
know? In the back too.
In the summertime, it gets a little, in here, but it's cool.
Gosh, the flies buzzing around. I can see that. So,
oh my! If you're still listening, here's the show.
Our show's gone off the rails, folks.
And with all the knowledge we have in the room about sound, we're talking about urinals. All right, so let's get the train back on track, and let's just go back to the starting, and this is going to be a really broad question, but I'm just trying to get things going. George, what's the biggest mistake new people make? They're getting into voiceover. What's the first biggest mistake they make with audio?
Well, I was going to joke that getting into voiceover is their first biggest mistake.
Depends on who you are. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's not a joke.
So the first big mistake they make with their audio, it's not totally common, but it is literally talking on the wrong side of the microphone.
Wow.
So this is the microphone that so many people buy as their first microphone. This is a Rode NT1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For good reason. It's a damn good mic. I know you guys can't see this, but I'll describe it to you. It's a really nice side address microphone. If you've ever heard of a microphone and you've heard of VoiceOver, you've probably heard of the Rode NT1. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What they did was put the giant text Rode and the giant logo for NT1 on the back of the microphone. So now not everybody, but very commonly, they speak into the wrong side of their Rode NT1. The side you speak into actually has a little gold dot. And that is the side of the microphone you speak into. And that is an extremely common thing. Not only the Rode, but really many microphones are confusing as to which side you actually speak into. The Yeti, the Blue Yeti is one of them. Mm-hmm. I see pictures all the time of them on people's desks, pointing at them like an old radio DJ mic from the 50s.
Yeah.
And it's pointing the wrong direction, you know? It's such a commonly misplaced thing is VoiceOver mics, because the ones that most newbies are going to buy aren't the shotgun mic that most of you or all of you guys are using. Mm-hmm. You know, with a shotgun mic, it's dreadfully obvious which way you talk into the mic. It's pretty clear which the front. But a lot of the studio mics that most people start with are not as obvious. So, yeah, that's probably the first thing. That is, you need to get that right. Make sure you know which side of the mic to speak into, because bizarrely, they often do not show a photo of somebody on mic.
Right.
On the box or in any way obvious. So people screw it up all the time.
Wow. Well, that must be a big assumption on their part that that we're all so smart, we know where to turn it. You almost think they would put like a stop sign on the back or something, not here.
A little mouth with some sound waves coming out, like right there on the front, you know?
Well, I mean, you would almost think they would talk to a guy who's worked with nothing but voice actors for 17 years and say, what would work well for the voiceover industry in terms of marketing and communication of product and design?
Not that would happening. Be a nice move.
Yeah.
Right.
It's actually happening more now, because I've been sticking my neck out way, way, way out to get products made for voiceover booths and voice actors.
But that's awesome.
It's not been easy.
Yeah. And I know it's a smaller niche market. You go to somebody like Sweetwater or Full Compass or whoever, they, you know, even as retailers, there's a guy at Sweetwater that I talked to, and he's supposed to come on before too long. And one of the things he talked about was his background coming from LA and being out there in a studio and doing voiceover and and leading him to Sweetwater. And I thought, man, that's fantastic. I wonder if even he was never assigned to me. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as they found out, oh, he is a voice actor. So then they moved my account to him, and that's when I learned about him. And, you know, that's the thing. We're so, I don't know. It's like when we talk about voice acting in public around our families, they're like, you don't have a job. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
We are
that's
such
not
a little niche market.
You'll never see a tax form, a job description, anything anywhere that says voice actor as a job.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. I've never seen it.
Correct. Yeah. Except on Fiverr. They'll let you choose to be a voice actor on Fiverr.
Yeah.
They'll let you.
Yeah.
I've never. Yeah, I'm with you. Google anywhere you're setting up your stuff for your landing pages
there.
And everything. Nothing. When you choose a profession, it's other. You're just other.
Yep. Yeah. We're the other group.
Sad.
Do you care if I ask a question?
Please do.
Yeah, no, because, we care, Charles.
Yeah.
If you're part of this podcast, you know you're not supposed to ask questions.
Yeah. Keep your mouth shut.
George, we all know you as George the Tech. I want to know George Whitta, man. Like, I want to know, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, other than the audio stuff, like, what do you like to do? Like, what makes George tick? Like, what's his thing besides?
Well, I mean, the one thing I do, other than spending time with my girlfriend and my daughter is in another state, so not as much with her anymore, but, is cycling. I'm super, super into bicycling clubs in LA. I've been volunteering for 13 years at a bicycle co-op head mechanic, mountain biking, you name it, man, anything with bicycles, bicycle advocacy, you name it. If I can be there, I'm there. Like
That's
on
awesome.
Sunday, I followed and supported a friend's bicycle trailer that can carry DJs or bands on a trailer. And I was the sound engineer to make sure that during the 3 or 4 hour long event where we were towing a DJ, that everything would continue working and it sounded good and all that stuff. And that was my, I of course voluntarily did this for fun.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that was something I actually did for fun. I was out there. We have an event here in Los Angeles called Ciclavia, which is like Cycle, C-I-C-L-A-V-I-A, which is named after Ciclovia, which is in Bogota, Colombia. And so we close streets every month or so for cycling and people walking and no cars. And that's what we were doing. So that's, I'm definitely highly obsessed with cycling, cycle culture, bike hacking, building bikes, anything bicycle, anything except really high-end competition. I'm not going to, you're not going to catch me sitting there watching Tour de France or really much competition. Not so interested in all of that, but I love the hobby of cycling and
like you're in it for the love of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of my friends do love that stuff and they do watch the races and they do talk about the tour and all this stuff. And I just don't have that sports mentality of big sports energy.
Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Sports energy. Not kind of my thing, but I will participate in local events. I participate in one called Coaster Brake Challenge, where we actually race mountain bikes that have only a coaster brake. And if you don't know what that is, think of your first bicycle as a child where you pedal backwards.
Stop. So it stops, like the resistance.
We do trail rides on bikes like this. It is wild.
Cool.
Is it safer to probably have that for trails versus the handbrake?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I don't know that joke.
Sounds way challenging, bouncing around and trying to backpedal. And
So is mostly mountain bike, or do you do long rides as well?
I've done a couple when I've needed to for training for one specific thing, but mostly if I do a long ride, it's riding up the Los Angeles mountains into the National Forest, up to Mount Wilson, if anybody's familiar with these places. But, you know, people think of Los Angeles as, I don't know, Hollywood and the beach, I don't know, but they forget there's a ginormous mountain range running right through the middle of it, going all the way to the desert. And it's huge. It's 5,600 feet of climbing from the very bottom to the very top. Man. And I've ridden up it numerous times. And
I grew up in LA.
That's incredible.
I grew up in LA and we could see the Griffith Observatory from our house or our apartment.
Cool. Yeah. That's neat to have. That's such an iconic thing in the backdrop. You know, LA, I've been here 20 years and I think anybody that's lived here a long time, it will tell you this, almost anybody will probably say they have a love-hate relationship with LA. I mean, so many things to love and also so much frustration, you know? So I've put in my 20 years in LA and I have a lot to show for it, but business success and retirement is not one of them. I mean, when I say business success, I have built a brand that I'm very proud of, and I have an awesome industry around me, and I have amazing clients and friends in our industry. All of it's great, but long term, I might have to start adulting pretty soon.
Darn it!
Don't we all?
Darn it! That's the hard part. And you're talking about doing that for the love of it. I mean, voiceover. Yeah. A lot of for some of us is that way too. I mean, I left a really nice job to do this full time, and I don't make half what I made, but I have a much better life. I love it. I can be creative. I've learned to do so many more things in this, getting into video, cool getting into production. You know, I got clients now that I do, you know, full spots for them. You know, you're mixing everything together. And I had a music background, so that was easy and fun, but I had a music background splicing tape. I didn't have one with, and this has been fantastic. I love it. And to come into this later in life and to walk away from a corporate world and say, I gave up a lot of money, but man, I sure enjoy what I do.
I think the people that have the most chances of success in starting their voiceover business do actually have some sort of a corporate background or maybe have a business background, because the entrepreneurship of running your voiceover business is absolutely the key element.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that.
Is a business. It absolutely is.
Yeah,
you know, you have to be very driven, very organized and extremely resourceful, not afraid of using every new tool, AI tool that's out there, anything you can to your advantage. That is the business of voiceover. I came into LA working with mostly like on camera, legit actors and a few people that were voice actors only. But I came into it working with all union talent who have agents and doing everything the traditional way.
Yeah.
So I've watched that evolve, depending on your point of view, over the last 16, 17, 18 years. And so it's been quite a journey to watch. I've watched the entire arc of actors' careers in before my eyes.
Wow. Mm. I can imagine. And then we saw the big surge 2020 to 2022 of everybody want to become a voice actor. Mm-hmm. And then now I think, I don't know that we're seeing mass exodus, but I know we're seeing a lot of a gear for sale. A lot of
gear for sale is definitely a bit of an indicator. Am seeing the booths coming on market and things like that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Not a good time to be in the business of selling voiceover booths.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's got to be tough.
They had a heyday and now it's kind of dying
out, it seems.
Hmm. So I would imagine that has that put a shift in your business as far as what you're doing now? Did you have a big increase of setting new people up and a lot of people wanting to get their sound listened to? Has that changed a lot here lately or is it about the same?
No, I mean, peak was 2021. 2020, things were going up, obviously. But 2021 was when people faced the music that the pandemic wasn't just a passing phase. Right. It wasn't a quick thing. And so that's where the really hesitant late adopters of technology and studios were coming to us needing help with their studios. Mm-hmm. So 2021 was our peak. I mean, literally sales, everything was our peak. And I don't know when I will be back at that number again, but we're not there. It's fallen off quite a bit. 2022 is a big drop in business and sales because we kind of hit saturation. Everybody that was going to get into the business already had fully gotten involved. Mm-hmm. And then now we have like a 2-year wave of voice actors and voice people. And I will make zero judgment as to who should or shouldn't be, but a huge wave of folks getting into the business of coaching voiceover. Mm-hmm. As we are all looking at the industry and trying to figure out how to continue to have a living wage moving forward. So it's a very complicated time for sure in this business, but I just continue to try to find what people need and meet their need, and that often means creating product that's more accessible. And that's why I make so much content now, so many videos and so much webinar and what I call modules, stream on demand content, because it's a far, far better way to serve people, at a lower budget and also just a really good value, instead of just hiring me one-on-one. I mean, the number of people hiring me one-on-one has dropped over the years. And so that's for various reasons, but I just want to make sure that I have things that meet people's needs and their budgets,
Right, right. Like, and you now have a team of people as well helping. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I by design, I'm the busiest one of all of us, right? And a lot of people do come to George the Tech to work with me, but we do have some extremely good techs and on our team, really in their own right. And I've selected all of them based on their unique set of skills. I always think of Liam Neeson. Isn't Liam Neeson? And they some of them are like me. They're just real jack of all trades. Like, brothers from another mother have this huge swath of experience. Like Robert Marshall, co-founder of Source Elements, Source Connect. He's a studio owner and just a super patient person. Like, he will spend the time with somebody on the phone to solve a problem like nobody I know. Mm-hmm. Tim Friedlander, owner of and co-partner of the Soundbox group here in LA, also available to be booked to help with more complex Pro Tools and Apollo audio interface issues. And Jim Edgar, who is an amazing technology guy in his own right with his own brand, also joined the fold. to work with us and gets occasional bookings. Tina Lehman, who joined the team recently, she's more of a specialist, but she's available, and the list goes on. These are the folks that have been doing more of the actual getting more bookings, but you know, it's essentially a casting site in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd say right. they wouldn't agree because I take too much of their money, but if you have an agent who takes as much as we do, don't bribe that agent. But everybody who's working with me is extremely, let's just put it this way, they're extremely kind to work with me and us, understanding that this is still very much a startup, and they are really investing time into helping the success of this business. They really are. I mean, you know, I take 50-50. Whatever they do, I get 50. You know, it's 50-50 split on everything. And that's a significant chunk out of their time. And yet they continue to help out and support our users and support me in this goal of mm-hmm. building an excellent supply of support on demand. You know, mm-hmm. so I love to give credit where it's due. But everybody, all of the guys and girls who have come to me, gotten some training, gotten onboarded. It's a process to work with us and mm-hmm. get into our system, and all of them invested time and to be a part of it. And so I highly appreciate everybody that's done that.
I think one of the reasons is from something you said a little bit earlier, and you use the word, instead of like helping, you use the word serving, right? Because you have that servant mindset instead mm-hmm. of like, this is my goal, this is what I'm doing, but it's like, I'm serving. This is something that I could do to serve the community, to serve the people. And I would say that's probably a direct sentiment to why the quality and caliber of people that you have continue to work with you on, to help also serve you on mm-hmm. your journey. And also, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's, mm-hmm. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's a good testimony. It's a good testimony to what you've done over the years to build that credibility, and I think that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. The industry needs that, and it's great to have the other people. Let's talk a little nuts and bolts, because I don't, you know, people sure. are going to want to hear the nuts and bolts.
Okay.
And I wrote down three words, and of course, space, which is always number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote down interface and cables, because you run into that a lot. So let's start with space. And as you can tell by we're on video, Jake is in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
Alden is in some walls around him in another room, kind of. Alden, is that an accurate
description? I built a studio that's soundproof, and then I've kind of treated half the space. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charles is in what we love to call the hobo booth, because he went around to construction sites and stole material and built
his
booth.
That was by the dumpsters, that was disregarded wood.
They told
wood.
You could have it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's
it.
Called all right. That's called upcycling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm all about that, Charles. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm in a room in the back of a garage that has a laundry room on one side mm-hmm. and used to be a booth on this side that I built that was a 4x7 and mm-hmm. and I hated being confined. Mm-hmm. So I moved all of my computers, printer, everything into there where I can shut the door and there's no mm-hmm. noise from it. And mm-hmm. I moved out in the 4 or 7x10 area with panels and a couple of automute blankets. And so we're all in a different thing. But yeah. The emphasis, the thing with all that being, you can do this in a lot of different places, but you still have to really look at space first and how you're going to treat it and take care mm-hmm. of it and go from there. So kind of give us the overrun of your take on all this, because this, folks, is the real deal. So here it comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so a common place to start for many people, of course, is a closet, because you now have a confined space that has less places for noise to leak in. Mm-hmm. So we're always, in most cases, when we're looking at a place in our home for a studio, it's going to be, where's the quietest place in the home?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is the bottom line. And unfortunately, for most people, that means a closet. You know, it would be nice to not have to be in a closet. Closets are confining. They're stuffy. They're windowless. They're, you know, not the most pleasant places to have to be in for long periods of time. But that is where most people will find quiet. However, what I'm seeing more of a trend of is definitely not being in a closet and building a blanket fort, sound blankets, PVC pipe, or getting my extremely beautifully designed, co-designed product, a tri-booth. I got to slip a plug in there somehow.
Yes.
that has become more and more the trend, I think, than the closet. I mean, and that's just totally anecdotal, but based on when people send me sound checks, I always ask, I always want to know what their recording situation is, what's the space mm-hmm. they're in, what they're doing. And more often it's, I made a PVC frame and put sound blankets on the frame, right? Mm-hmm. So the upshot of that is, the pro of that is that you are not in a small chamber. Like when you're in a closet or a booth like this one, there's glass on this side, mm-hmm. you know, huge piece of glass. You are creating a bad acoustic situation. Like the smaller the enclosure you are in, acoustically, the worse it theoretically is. Mm-hmm. Or really is going to be. So you have a tremendous row to hoe to get rid of all of that resonance. And the thing is, the smaller the booth is, oftentimes the thicker the acoustical treatment needs to be. So mm-hmm. then it gets even smaller. Mm-hmm. It starts small and it shrinks as you add more and more paneling to get rid of the resonances, right? Mm-hmm. So that is really the bottom line, is how do you get rid of the different things that color the sound of your voice, taking away from that clear clarity, pureness, the purity of your voice, which you don't often hear because you're always in a living room or a dining mm-hmm. room. The clearest, purest version of your voice you'll probably ever hear is outside, like in an open space where there's absolutely nothing reflecting the sound, right? Mm, it is as dry and dead as you can get. That's kind of the holy grail. And to get to a space inside a box that is that acoustically dead requires far thicker material on the walls than anybody seems to understand, including the booth makers that make all of the acoustical, I'm not going to call them acoustical booths, the ISO booths,
mm-hmm. right.
because they are designed to reduce noise, but they are not properly acoustically designed to control all of the resonances and the ringing in mm-hmm. those booths. They just right. don't get the acoustics side of it at all. And you know, a few might be listening and going, well, we do. They are starting to finally catch up. And some are better than others, and some are even more so open to collaborating. And I will give huge credit to vocalbooth.com because they brought me in last fall to actually collaborate on this and come up with better acoustical treatment to either upgrade their booths or really upgrade any booth.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So, you know, for a company to be willing to do that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For
so,
sure.
So since we're talking about, you know, you said, you know, it needs to be really, really thick to, or we don't really know how much. So one of my questions that I kind of prepared was, what is the best way to, I mean, we can't totally block out. Well, maybe we can, I don't know. But it's hard to block out super low tones that are loud that come from outside.
Yeah,
so
that's
what?
Right.
Yeah, so
nearly
what's
impossible?
Yeah, so what's the best way to minimize low tone intrusion into your booth? Both, like, if you're on a budget and you got money to burn, you know, like, what are the best ways to really dampen and isolate that noise out as much as we can?
Well, if you're on a budget, often that implies that you don't own your home. if you don't own your home. I don't own my home. I'm renting an apartment in Venice like a regular person. Mm-hmm. I don't have any options to better improve my low frequency noise mm-hmm. at all. None. Mm-hmm. Zilch. I'm in a Studio Bricks 1. And if Santa Monica Airport has a fly-in that day and it's nothing but small aircraft Cessnas and everything, it's just it's a nightmare because mm-hmm. they take off and then they make a nice sweeping curve to fly south down the coast. And that's, mm-hmm. that is dead over my apartment.
Yeah.
And if it happens during this taping, probably you'll hear it, although I'm cheating by using an expander, mixer, blah, 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 magic sauce on my audio right now. So you don't. But yeah, you would definitely hear it. It'll drone and moan right mm-hmm. through the walls of this booth like it's not even here.
Yeah.
So low frequency sound. There are different frequency bands where the noise either is absolutely unstoppable but easily removed using just a low cut filter. Mm-hmm. Right, just EQ it out. That is if it sounds well below 80 hertz, then it's not nearly as a concern because we can just simply cut off those frequencies and be done with it. Yes, you're going to hear it in the environment. Yes, it could be distracting, but at least we know we can just cut those out without any mm-hmm. loss of quality. It's the sounds between like 80 and 150 or so, which mm-hmm. are the worst because now they are right in the meat of your voice range, especially for men. Who have a lot of sound information between 80 and 120, women often start around 100 or 120 and go up. So it's really rough for men because those droning, moaning, groaning sounds from weed whackers and leaf blowers and airplanes and aircraft, all that stuff falls right into that real true voice range. Mm-hmm. And that is quite challenging to stop. I mean, you have to build heavy, heavy walls with concrete, brick, whatever you can, and then literally have a separate space inside where your booth is. We call it room in a room. You know, the mm-hmm. booth is physically not connected to anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's why these prefab ISO booths do have an advantage because they are standing on their own and they should be at least on wheels or little rubber feet to try to stop vibration, you know, because the vibration doesn't just go right through the walls and the air only. Mm-hmm. It travels through the framing of your building. Mm-hmm. So the ones that are going to have the worst time of this are the ones that are not sitting on a concrete slab.
Hey, this is Jenna Birmingham, and you're listening to another VO podcast, a place where VOs can learn about stuff like improv, for example, and how important it can be in VO, because you never know when you might need to say something funny off the cuff. Like right now. When I can't think of anything.
Mm-hmm. So if you're on the second story of a building or you have a crawl space under your building, now you have another source for that low frequency to leak in right up through the floor. And that isn't even harder to deal with. The best case is when you are sitting on concrete. Mm-hmm. If your booth is sitting on a concrete slab, and it's not attached to the outside of the house, that's ideal. And can you do it on a budget? Hey, yeah, you can. If you have the space and you have the know-how, yes, for a couple $1,000s, you could build something pretty, pretty significant. But the devil's in the details with soundproofing. Mm-hmm. So you can spend thousands, tens of thousands, and make a small mistake and ruin it.
Yeah. Oh.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weakest link thing, isn't it?
It's a weakest link thing. We call it a short out or a shorting out, mm. Where there's a connection from the outside world to the inside world. That can be a single screw or a nail.
Oh, wow. If that
connection between the two exists. Well, I use this analogy. Think of a guitar. Think of the bridge of the guitar where the string is strung over a bridge. Mm-hmm. And then pluck the string. Think of the contact surface area between the string and the bridge. What is it? The size of a pin? Mm-hmm. Head of a pin, right? Mm-hmm. And then think about how the sound of that instrument resonates and travels across a concert hall. You know, mm-hmm. that's all it takes is that one point of contact. Mm-hmm. Well, that translates right over to a single screw or single nail between your inside unit and your outside unit. And mm-hmm. you have ruined your wow. isolation.
Wow.
So mm-hmm. it's not super difficult, but it's a very much attention to detail kind of build to do it well.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And that's what I mentioned earlier about the room that Ryder had done and all of the work that went into that. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's an amazing space and probably as, you know, as good as anybody could ask. I had looked at moving into my shop. It's on a concrete floor. Mm-hmm. I'd looked at having someone come in and do me like an 8x12 concrete block outlay, you know, foam fill all the holes in the block, then go on the inside of the block, and do the walls and do the, what do you call it, where the studs are offset and you're weaving mm-hmm. the rock wool through and da da da. Mm-hmm. And still, it's a ton of money. But like you said, if I do that myself and I play with it, I'll probably screw it up. You know, if mm-hmm. I just do it on my own, I would almost, you know, I would need to consult with someone like you and say, walk me through this step by step. Here's what I'm thinking. And I assume you still do some stuff like that as well.
Oh, I do that a lot. It's one of my top revenue, annual revenue is almost from studio design.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I do a lot of studio design, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'll tell you what I'm not. I'm not I don't have a degree in acoustics. Okay. And I do not have an architectural degree. If I rewound my life, I would maybe have done those things, but I might still be in school and still paying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I went to Virginia Tech and we actually, we had a renowned architectural school there. It was a 5-year program. It was intense. But the bottom line is everything I've learned has been from real world practical stuff. Mm-hmm. It has been from doing it. It is from a few pioneering clients, and I'll call them that, Joe Cipriano being one of them, who hired me very early days and trusted me to design a pretty expensive studio, you know, because of guys like Joe, who, you know, he trusted me, whether he should have or not, he trusted me to design his studio back in his house that he no longer owns, sadly, but it was in Bel Air, and it was, it was a heck of a build. And people still talk about it to this day, anybody that walked into that space.
Yeah, have
you
guys,
any of you ever seen it?
I've watched the video. It's fantastic.
Wow.
He had in mind exactly, he wanted to be able to see so many things when he was working and look out and see. And
lots of glass.
That's, yeah, yeah, a ton of glass. It's really gorgeous. But
yeah, so it's because of Joe and others and the SAG Foundation, actually, who I helped design the Don LaFontaine Voiceover Lab 1.0. 2.0 is coming any week now.
Wow,
the new one's going to be launched, which is insane.
Yeah.
But I helped design that, and I had no business doing that. I mean, honestly, I did not have any kind of real-world experience designing anything close to that facility. So, again, it's thanks to a few people that believed in me and allowed me to do those projects that allowed me to build my skill set and hone in and learn, and then meeting others along the way who do have the degrees, who do have the 30, 40, 50, 60 year tenure in sound isolation, vibration, and acoustics, who I've been able to get mentorship from. That is what allowed me to get to where I am and get so good at designing these spaces and break it down in a way that's easy to follow. You know, I call it a build proposal. Mm-hmm. I just break it down. It's like 8 to 12 page PDF with cutaway drawings and sketches and different elements I've cobbled together, and just a breakdown of how to make the walls, how to make the ceiling, how to do your doors and your windows, and mm-hmm. just to make sure that there's as little things to mess up as possible. And oftentimes that will get bid on by a contractor. I will have a meeting with the contractor to talk through what any questions that they may have, and I guarantee they will have some. And then checking in on the bid via Zoom, or if lucky, if I can, in person, and making sure they don't make any critical mistakes. Again, there's a few key moments, especially before drywall goes up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that mm-hmm. we just want to make sure it's all being done correctly. So
yeah,
that's a big part of what I do. And it's one of the most creative parts of what I do. I really enjoy that. These projects can take years.
Yeah.
You know, money is money. Mm-hmm. I have projects that are not quite finished that started 3 years ago, which for the owners is very frustrating, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. And that was kind of my thought was, if I were to do this out there, I would probably take my time with it because it's a big investment, you know, $5,000-$6,000 a concrete block. And then I've got to wait, and then I got to get a framer, then I got to do this. And I probably won't do it because I may be dead before I could get it finished, but that's okay. Well, it's fun to think
thing
about.
Is, yeah. All that custom construction almost never adds value to your home either, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
right.
Yes.
You know? Unless you sell to another voice actor, it's like, yes.
If you're really lucky, like Dan Leonard struck gold when he bought the house that he and his wife have in Sherman Oaks, because somebody had already spent the blood, sweat, and tears and the divorce to soundproof the garage. That was the whole story. They renovated the whole house and soundproofed the garage to make a studio, and then they got divorced. And then they
sold it.
Oh my God.
So
I can see that.
Yeah. Dan got extremely lucky and got a space that a huge investment had already been made in soundproofing the garage. Mm-hmm. And the buyers or sellers were lucky too, because they didn't have to tear all that out.
Turn it
back into a garage, right? Yeah. So those things happen, but it's not that common. And so when you do make a huge investment in building a studio at home, just make sure your intention is to stay there for quite a long time to defer the cost of it, you know?
Right.
And that's another thing I often will do is I have a lot of meetings with clients talking about building versus buying a booth. Mm-hmm. We will go into it. You know, I will really get into the nitty gritty and make sure that they are making the right decision, and even down to which booth I recommend they buy and what's going to meet their needs and on and on and on. Just, you know, spend some money with me to save money. I know it sounds silly, mm-hmm. but it's true. Mm-hmm. I will that make sure sense. I'm saving you tons of money in some cases, making mm-hmm. the yeah.
Well, and saving frustration as well, because they may get their idea of what their booth should be like put together, and they are frustrated because they can't figure out why it's still a problem.
Saving marriages, man. Saving marriages, dude.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, the other thing that comes in is not just your home and your area, but it's the environment. See, I live out in the middle of nowhere. That's biggest an noise. Yeah. The
Maybe
biggest
not for
noise,
internet.
No, that's okay. It's
you got
okay.
Decent internet?
Where I'm
okay,
at.
Good.
I've got good internet.
Good.
The disadvantage is I'm in what's called the bottom of a holler or a hill or a drop off or whatever you want to call it.
Are you in West Virginia?
No, I'm in Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee. And, they call them hollers in West Virginia. I know that.
Yeah. and then the main road, which is a state, I won't call it a highway, but it's a 2-lane, decent mm-hmm. traffic, and it goes uphill. So what I get a lot of times here are the pickup trucks and cars when they accelerate up that hill. I'm going to get that low hum. It's going to come through the hollow. Yeah.
As they upshift,
and it's going to come through the hollow, and I'm going to get a little of that. And that's the worst thing here.
Yeah.
But that's a big thing, too, here. I even thought about in this room I'm in now, which is concrete. Yeah, I could probably put up another interior wall and knock some more of that down versus going out to that room. But I agree. It's well worth the consult to get all of that worked out in advance, because if you're going to do this and you're going to do it right, do it right. Mm-hmm. You know, just
I just recently met a new contractor, new to me contractor here in L.A., who is next level when it comes to this stuff. Like, he literally builds and designs studios. And I had him come walk a job site, and I was blown away with the details that he noticed. I'd had several contractors walk this job site. It's been a process. And this fellow saw everything. He didn't miss a beat. You know, he was like, what are we going to do about water encroachment when this hillside gets saturated in the next giant rain that we have out here all the time now? And how are we going to deal? You know, like, he knows he's like, how about we sheet this building in fireproof plywood so you have 30 more minutes to stop the fire from burning your investment?
Oh,
you know,
all
these things like, you know, that are really important that, you know, you may not even bother with because you want to save some money. And then you lose your whole structure or, lose your investment, right? So the details are tremendous, you know, to do it well if you're going to do a freestanding outside structure. But people love doing tough sheds, you know, or any kind of an insta-shed type thing, because it is pretty cost-effective, you know. We've done some really cool ones. We did one near Dallas for Ben Mayer, I believe his name is, and I got to actually see it last summer when I went up to the One Voice conference. I went to his place outside Dallas, and it was really cool to see everything we talked about, worked on, discussed, and designed.
Yeah,
finished, nearly finished to the point it was a finished workspace. So, yes, it's really gratifying. But yeah, I hope to prevent people from overinvesting in something that they weren't prepared to spend the money on or making the wrong decision, you know?
Right.
What about this new, well, I'll say new, it's been a few years since I've seen it. There's a guy up in Canada that does some videos, and they've got a PA speaker down in a box, and they throw this board on top of it, and it's this green, I forget, but I don't think it's available here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I think it's Canada only. Mm-hmm. Something like that to me would be fantastic, but there are alternatives here. I suppose that you guys are doing.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of that product, the trademark name of it, but it's not too different from a material we have here in the States called homosote, and it's a soundboard. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of these products are being sold as like, this is a soundproofing product, but what really is a soundproofing product, what really is what's really going on is it's a soundproofing system. It's many different mm-hmm. things integrated mm-hmm. together. In fact, I'm going to have a video up soon. I was at NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters conference in Las Vegas. And if you are at all a geek and about anything audio video, this is the conference to go to, man.
Yeah.
It is like, I'm actually, last night I just started, I have all this like B-roll where I'm just walking through the halls, like filming. And I realized people might actually enjoy watching that because it's just fly on the wall of what it's like to be there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to post that. But I did interview a company called Troy Sound or Troy Acoustics, and they had this incredible wall system, you know, that was in this plexiglass box. So it was like a cutaway, and you could see all the elements that made this mm-hmm. about a foot thick wall, you know. But it is, it's an entire system. Any one product like that, MLV or whatever mm-hmm. trademark brand name like SoundBlock mm-hmm. or whatever there is, none of these things work on their own. All of them are part of a system and have to be mounted correctly and in the right sequence to actually be really, really, truly effective. Mm-hmm. None of them will just be glued or sprayed or nailed to an existing wall to solve your problem.
Yeah.
It's not
good happening. Good point.
Wow.
Hey, let's rewind a little bit because we're going to run out of time before we know it. And I know a lot of people are going to want to know some real basic stuff.
Sure.
We'll get away from spaces for a minute.
All right.
Let's real quick talk about the importance of mic cables. And
you need to have one. That's very
absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, okay. And one of the recent
down, Jake.
One of my recent finds.
Yeah.
One of my recent finds is World's Best Cables.
Yeah,
so they're
one of the very few remaining proper microphone cable vendors on Amazon.
Yeah.
Troy recommended them to me.
Yeah, and the now everything I've read, and I know you can tell us if this is true or not, that they are literally the same ingredients as a Megami cable.
My understanding of that is true. All the specs and all the materials and the Neutrik brand connectors they use and everything is what you're going to see on a branded cable from like Megami. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be roughly half the price. And I believe in them enough to have them on my gear recommendations page, actually. On our site, we have a gear recommendations area with different categories and stuff. And I have those cables on there. Mic cables, they're not a problem until they fail. You can honestly have almost any grade of mic cable and really likely have no issues, to be completely frank. Mm-hmm. But almost all of you are going to only have one. And you may only ever buy one.
Right.
Like if you're not moving your studio and it's just going to be set up permanently and so if you're weighing the difference between spending $20 and $40 on the cable and you're not sure, just buy the $40 cable. Mm-hmm. There are some that are grossly overpriced. Monster Cable is notorious for fleecing people on cables and wires.
Right.
They're hilarious. But honestly, just get one good cable. It should have good connectors. Neutrik is one of the best brands. They're well made. They're repairable. I don't know if you'll ever repair one, but they're repairable. Mm-hmm. You know, you can actually take them apart and fix a bad connection if that ever happened. Mm-hmm. But get at least one good cable. And if you're going to buy one, then buy a second one and just have it hanging in your spares area, because if you are really truly a busy voice actor and you cannot afford to go down, have spares and have spares of literally everything.
Exactly.
Especially if you're not in a big city with a guitar center nearby, and let's face it, like music stores with inventory are really a dying breed. They're not going to be around forever, folks, guitar center included. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having a spare on hand of everything, doesn't mean you have to have the exact same expensive audio interface or whatever. Even your travel kit could be your backup for your main kit, right?
Yeah.
And what I tell a lot of my clients is, don't worry, if something goes wrong, you always have your laptop and your Micport Pro and your shotgun mic, and you can get the work done.
Yep.
So don't panic. You know, there's no sense, there's no reason to have a meltdown panic fit because you have your travel kit. Yeah. You know,
yeah, mm-hmm.
you can always yep. bang Makes that sense. Thing out and have that up in your booth and running within 10 minutes, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that's always a fact. Have backups of everything because that could pay for itself in one lost job.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I have a belief with cables that shorter is better. Is that true pretty much?
That is especially true for anything digital. Mm-hmm. So USB, USB-C, HDMI, and basically the faster the data rate, the shorter the cable has to be essentially. Mm-hmm. So when it's a cable for extremely high data bit rate, let's say Thunderbolt 3 or mm-hmm. Thunderbolt 4, those cable lengths are highly restricted because of that quality of signal. Analog audio, on the other hand, especially balanced, which is what a microphone cable is, it's actually sending two signals simultaneously. One of them is what we call out of phase from the other. And then at the other end of the cable, they're reversed in phase again so that any noise is canceled out. That's essentially what a balanced cable is. Those can run literally hundreds of feet without any real loss of signal quality. There might be a very minuscule loss in level, a literal voltage output, but you will not lose quality and the signal will remain clean. So long cable runs, analog is pretty long. It's going to be either analog or it's going to be optical. Believe it or not, there are optical USB and Thunderbolt cables made by a company called Corning. I believe it's the same Corning. Corning, New York, that makes Corning insulation and Corning glass. Okay. And
yeah, like Corningware, like the company that makes the plates. Yeah. Wow.
Corning, New York. There's all this stuff from Corning, you know. I believe it's the same Corning, but anyway, they make optical. You want to buy a $250 USB cable, they got it. It'll run.
Wow.
It'll run 30 wow. meters, 40 meters.
And it's still flexible and everything, right?
It's, well, you know, they're not quite as flexible as electrical cords. You can't bend them quite as tightly. They have to stay a little bit of a coil. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're very thin looking cables. They look fragile because they are much thinner usually. Huh. But optical can run really long distances as well. So if you really are in a bind and you want to have your Apollo in your booth and your computer's 25 feet away, yes, it can be done. It's going to be pricey for one of these cables, but you know, $200 to $300 will solve your problem with one of these optical cables. Just remember, they're also electrical insulators. So when you're used to using a user USB interface that uses a USB cable that powers the user USB interface, you know, like a Scarlett or something, those cables will not work. So you have to have a power supply at the end in your booth to power the thing, because the cable has no power. It's optical. Mm-hmm. That's right. A pro and a con too, because now it's also an insulator. So if you have electrical interference between your machine room and your studio booth, you've now isolated them from each other. Mm-hmm. So it gets very interesting when you start talking about optical.
Yeah.
Here I go into the weeds.
Yeah. It's good that you said, you know, to have that backup for whatever it is. If it's, you know, do you have a backup mic? Do you have a backup interface? Do you have a backup, a laptop or computer or something, you know? Because like you said, that one missed job could, you know, pay for five of those, you know, it's in that situation. Cause, when I was having a business consult with Chuck Duran, he's like, you know, we were talking about, you know, being professional, you know, we're a professional voice actor. We're a professional in our industry. And he's like, do you have a backup for my interface? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, what's going to happen when 20 minutes before your call or, you know, something like that, or, you know, the night before, the morning of, your interface craps out on you. And he's like, will you have a backup? Will you still be able to deliver what you need to that client? Yes. And he's like, you know, you got to think about things like that. If you're going to say you're a professional at what you do, you need to be professional at what you do. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. I mean, that was real talk.
Dependability and consistency are what the pros have that amateurs or new people don't have. They might be able to pull off a good sounding audition. They might be able to pull off a convincing performance and it might sound pretty good, but can they do that day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, and send in something a year or two later or 3 years later, that's a pickup or a new price change or something else. And it immediately drops right into the project. And then the client goes right back to work. You're just a big, you're a cog in this huge machine, right. man. Mm-hmm. And you need right. to just mm-hmm. be the best, smoothest, quietest, spinning, perfectly meshing yeah. cog ever they've ever had.
Right.
Yeah. Right. it's not too, it's not a very, it's not very sexy. No. Most of voiceover isn't. It's just solving their problem and moving on and going on to the next project. So the less friction you cause in the project, the more they're going to keep just hiring you back. Cause man, yeah. that was so damn easy.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That was easier right. than programming that freaking annoying AI voice that yeah. we tried to use for weeks.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's the fun part.
I do have one question that I've, like, I was excited. This is like the first question that came to my mind. What is the best way to make life easy for your audio engineer and yourself when you're on a live directed session? Like, what do we need to understand to make it go as smoothly as we can? And for the, you know, for the things that we can control, like to have that good relationship, because I always look at it as the audio, when we go on a call and the audio engineer is in a different location from the client and me, they're like, we're a team. I always think of as us as a team, not like yeah. us as a team against the client, but like we're, you know, we're in the same, we got the same jerseys on over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's really important. That's a great question. I don't think I've ever been asked that question exactly that way.
Way to go,
really,
Charles.
Dude. Yes.
I mean, because it's important to me, you know, like yeah. I love my yeah. audio engineers yeah. that I it work is. With on calls.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I try. I yeah. want to be as I mean, for them as well. Yeah.
As soon as it feels like the engineer, like you're a pain in the neck to the engineer, or there's any feeling of adversarial or even competitiveness or whatever weirdness people do, things can be challenging. Yeah, with Source, let's just drop Source Connect into the slot, because this is what most commonly people are using to remotely collaborate.
Right.
And it's the one that causes probably the most stress and anxiety for the voice actor to have to use. Yeah. If this isn't like a literally every day or every week client, do a test. Connect to the studio in advance of the session.
Right.
Because if you make it easy for the engineer, then the engineer looks good to the client. Mm-hmm. And so they're happy because they don't look like a jerk. If you have problems, depends on the client. The less experienced ones are going to blame you, the talent, because they assume that you must know how you do everything, right? Mm-hmm. Don't you right. do everything? But at the higher level, commercials and the bigger jobs, they know the chain of command. They know who's involved in the project. And when things technically fail in a session and you've got 5 to 10 different people on the call, time is money. That's everybody's salary being paid. It's pressure is on and there's technical issues. It's the engineer who's taking the blame. So it's a really good point. It's just have things dialed in and do a test if you're not 100% sure that everything's working 100% correctly. And I would imagine any legitimate studio and engineer would be open to doing that. They might be busy, but they would still like to know that you've done your due diligence. You have done everything you can on your end. You have your ports mapped. I know everybody hates hearing the ports map thing, but do it. It's not that freaking hard, and there are free resources, and even Source Elements will set it up for you. If you're a subscriber, they will do it for you and fix it for you. But just do those things and don't be like, well, I mean, I always get away with Wi-Fi. Well, maybe, but just plug it in with Ethernet, run that cable, even if you have to unfurl the damn thing and run it down the hall to the router.
Yeah.
Just don't be the one who's like, well, I can get away. Usually I get away with it. So why not today? You know?
Yeah, for sure. Guys, we're coming up on the hour and we don't want to keep George too long. I want him to have the opportunity because we were, you know, the other stuff we could ask about, we could go on for hours.
Yeah.
I would rather send people.
I have like 63 more questions on my thing. So, I mean,
email him, Charles.
That's right.
I want to direct people to where they can go look at his recommendations for this, that, and the other and get more familiar with his site. Get more familiar if you're thinking about a booth with the tri-booth. That may be a great option for you, not only to set up at home, but then if you build something else later, now you can break it down into the bag. You got a travel booth if you need it.
It's a road
if you
warrior.
Feel and if you're uncomfortable with what you have setting up in a hotel room or a car, the one last thing I want to hit on before we get all your contact info is the interface that you guys have been working on and the launch of that and how that's going.
Well, it is still in the actual design phase. It seems like we designed it a year ago. Well, what we did was we came up with the idea of it. It was a twinkle in our eye a year ago. And then we got a lot of folks who trusted us and got them to prepay into pre-ordering the unit, which, trust us, is something that we did not take lightly. And now that money is sitting in Centrance and helping to fund the development and launch of the Passport VO. So right now we are in the Michael from Centrance is, I think for the first time in several months right now, is getting 100% attention to the project because he's got many things in the pipeline. Like he's trying to deliver past products. He's trying to deliver things where a USB chip, for example, which many of his products use, just disappeared out of production in Taiwan, no longer available. So he had to source a new chip and then redesign all the boards and all the products to accommodate that new chip, which took months. So that really set us behind. That kicked everything back about 6 months. So we're roughly 6 months or so behind, but we're looking at seeing a prototype, you know, in the next couple of months. Cool. And once when you guys see us, trust me, when we have a working prototype in our hot little hands, everybody's going to know. We're going to be constantly obsessing and talking about the Passport VO. But essentially, just in a very quick nutshell, it's just an audio interface with every little consideration we could possibly make to make the voice actor's life better, the pro working voice actor who has to switch between mics, mute their mic, have a fold back or loop back to the client, and control all this with there's a picture of it right there. It's and it literally is about that small. That's the crazy thing. I mean, if I had my druthers, it would be physically larger, but we're building it on a building it on an existing platform. So it's obviously quite portable too. And if you want to just see what it is in more detail and understand more about it, and I believe you can still be a part of the initial 100 unit pre-order because they're not all sold out. You can go to centrance.com/passport with a single S because it's Pro Audio Suite, Passport VO. And you can see more about it there. But I mean, Michael will do little videos with little updates from time to time, letting everybody know the status. But it's been tough. We did not want to make people wait for as long as they've waited, but I also feel like a year from conception to finalizing design isn't all that unusual,
right?
So there was a little bit of too much of an overpromise under deliver on that. That was the only thing I kind of regretted, but it's going to happen.
It's even got a stand clamp. So it's like it's portable. You can that's
it's
awesome.
Got a quarter 20 thread on the back too, so it'll thread onto any stand.
Nice.
So it is coming. So you'll know. Awesome. We'll make sure you know. Awesome. You'll see it.
All right, let's put the onus on you. Lay all the information out there. How people can find you, get in touch with you and your team, and you know this is your go-to audio guy, folks.
Yeah,
here's George.
Yeah, well, what I've been doing as a tradition in supporting our listeners of all of the shows that we guest on is creating custom landing pages for every show we do. And for you guys, we're going to have one that's essentially our website, georgethe.tech/, and it's a, say the name of the show.
Another VO podcast.
It's another VO podcast.
Yeah.
And it would just be the initials IAVP.
Sweet.
IAVP. So /IAVP. We'll have a landing page there. And I'll cherry pick a few services that are our most popular because the website is a little overwhelming with options. And then there'll be a coupon code on there for y'all to get 10% off anything that you buy, whether it's a video or any service. And it'll all be in one place right there. And then, of course, you can look at the whole site. You can go to the resources page. I would say if you're not ready to buy anything, the first thing to do is go to the resources menu. Click on that, and then that's just nothing but information.
Sweet.
Like, tons and tons of stuff for you guys to look through and learn from for
very
free.
Cool.
And awesome. You can also toy around with our new search chatbot, which is a little bubble head of me at the bottom right of the page. Click on that, and you can type in all sorts of stuff, and you might learn something along the way. It's pretty knowledgeable, but it'll help you find what you're looking for.
Very cool.
Sweet. Good stuff.
That's
good
awesome. Stuff. Thank you so much for that.
That is great.
Yeah, appreciate
thanks
you
for
joining us.
Guys. Yeah.
Oh, we appreciate it. Oh, appreciate you taking a big time out of your morning. Alden, Jake, and Charles, thank you guys for showing up.
Yeah, thank you.
And
absolutely.
We'll see everybody next time on another VO podcast.
Hasta luego.
Later, dudes.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of It's Another VO Podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. You can also email us your questions to anothervopodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at anothervopodcast. See you next time.